consciousness down from its natural desire to gravitate ever higher. Our emotions, weights, emotional weights. We talk about the weight of emotions, the weight on our shoulders, emotions. Therefore, if we're going to go with this vibrational change, we need to release the weights that are holding us down. So what we're doing now all over the world, including yours truly, he said, remembering the last 6 months, we're attracting to us people and experiences which are triggering the emotional gunge that we haven't wanted to deal with. Change the subject, mate, don't want to talk about it, and we're having to face it. I think the earth as an entity and the collective human mind is facing the same stuff. And the reason it's important, so important, to get out of the personality, it is aspects of consciousness attracting to each other what they need to experience to evolve with this transformation. We can just hold that big picture, we get out of the emotion. If we don't, the outpouring of individual and collective emotion in the next few years is going to create tremendous trauma on all levels, because we are going to be attracting experiences to us, people to us, which will help us cleanse ourselves in this period of purification, cleanse ourselves of emotional imbalances, and get out of here. If we take everyone who gives us an experience to do that as personally responsible, then we're going to have massive conflict on an individual, a country, and global level, because everyone is going to be resenting everyone else for, how dare you give me an experience that helps me evolve? I'm affronted. I mean, that's the level we're talking about. If we get pulled into the personality and we see people who are interacting with us and giving us these evolutionary experiences as personalities, and it's to do with them and not to do with us and not to do with the big picture, then the emotional outpouring will create tremendous conflict in the world. If we can get out of the personality and see the big picture, we can let the emotion go without the turmoil. And that is a choice. You see, I don't feel myself there's any such thing as a preordained future. If there was, then we are serious robots here. What I feel, you know, when psychics and stuff tune into the future, I think what they're tuning into is not the future that will be, but the future that will be if things don't change. It's a projected future. And obviously the nearer that projected future hits the now, the more likely the projected future is to be a physical event, a physical experience. But the further the projected future is projected outwards, the more opportunity there is for us to change, therefore the projected future to change. And I don't think a lot of things are preordained, I think they're down to us. If we react to this transformation and instead of fighting it, we just get on the airbed and float with it, then the transitional period will be a lot less traumatic than it needs to be. And our lives will be a lot less traumatic, and these challenges we face will be a lot less traumatic than they need to be if we hold on to the three-dimensional conditioned view of reality and we get caught into the emotion and the personality. It is never, never personal. If you were in another part of the country, you'd pull in another energy field. It'd be another person, but it would be in the state of being you needed to face. You live in the south of the country, you'll pull in someone down there is of a state of being that you need to interact with to learn in your own evolution. It's not personal, it's about states of being, that's all it is. We get out of the personality, a lot of the trauma and hassle and stuff disappears, because we hold the big picture.
David, do you think it... Do you think that it's somewhat a mixture of what you're talking about? Here's what I'm saying. If you're sitting in the midst of wherever, and there's lots of people doing drama around you, mm-hmm. you could have or you could be experiencing not the drama, but the freedom from the drama while the drama is going on around
you. Right.
To what degree do you think the 100th monkey principle has to apply, or is that going to be operating at the same time? For example, a lot of drama is going to happen before the 100th Moncrief principle does apply.
I think both are happening at once. I think that's the 100th Moncrief thing. A guy in Britain called Rupert Sheldrake calls morphic resonance and stuff is absolutely a key to what's going on here. If it was a case of having to talk voice to ear to everyone on the planet, then God, is that the time I must go home, wasting our time? Not wasting your time, but you're never going to make the difference in that's necessary in the time that it needs to be made. So what happens, I feel, is that this 100th monkey syndrome, which...
David, let me interrupt you just a second, because you mentioned a very important person, Rupert Sheldrake,
yeah.
And I want to just very quickly mention an important phenomena that he has been working on for years for many people here, which is if you have a... Doris has some birds over her house, and one of them hits an electric wire and gets shocked and dies. He's been able to show that the consciousness of many other birds, if not all of them, will pick up that information and be able to use it. So a bird in Pennsylvania who might land on a wire now knows to avoid it. That's a very remarkable thing of group consciousness. So.
Yeah, the way I think it works is from a establishment science point of view, it's like a mystery there. And from most points of view in the three-dimensional world, it's a mystery, but it's not a mystery at all. The way I think it works is that we are connected to each other at a certain vibrational level, collective mind, we could call it. All species are connected at a certain level. And the way the 100th monkey syndrome works, I feel, is that once a certain number, and it's not many, have actually learned something new, the sum total, there is a critical mass point, not very many, where the sum total of that new knowledge is powerful enough in the collective level of the human mind for it to be accessed by anyone connected to that mind. And at that point, those who have never been shown how to do it suddenly do it by inspiration, just by knowingness, because they're locking in and tuning in to the knowledge put there by the critical mass view. We're back to the front of the snowplow here. And because animals and birds don't watch CBS News and stuff like that, they don't read USA Today and the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they're not constantly told these levels of themselves don't exist, he's mad, he is, he's off the wall, have you seen what they're saying? They're actually, it's all part of life to them. So what we call morphic resonance, the 100th monkey syndrome, happens very, very powerfully within the animal kingdom, because that's part of their tuning process. They're not switching it off and denying it and putting eggshells up because no one's telling them that they should. The human mind, however, works in the same way. It's interesting how many inspirations in various fields have happened in different parts of the world at the same time over the period of human history. It's to do with morphic resonance also, I feel. So what we're doing, every time someone speaks at a meeting, they're putting that vibration of those words into the collective field. Every time any member of the audience has their consciousness challenged and maybe opened more by the speaker, their knowledge is going into the collective field. Every time someone reads Contact newspaper, every time someone reads a book on these subjects and is inspired by them to open their mind and open their heart and see the bigger picture, their thought patterns are going into the collective mind. Now, we're now starting to rush, I believe, towards the critical mass point of the 100th monkey syndrome and morphic resonance. And it doesn't work like, I did a talk here tonight. I mean, someone in Peking doesn't go, hold on a minute, I can hear some bloke talking. He's talking about Larry Grayson and some pyramid. What's he saying? Hold on a minute, dear. It's obviously in an inspiration, a knowingness that something works like something, or something's not right, or that there's more to life than meets the eye. However, whatever form it takes, it's a knowingness, an inspiration, a feeling. That's what they're tuning into. And that's a vibration that is being put in all over the world now. So we're hurtling towards critical mass. And critical mass is when the dam bursts. And I don't think we're far away from that now. Because a very, very few people control this world. It's actually going to take a very, very few people comparatively to set it free. At nothing like half. So every time you send the newspaper out, or I write a book or make a talk, and anyone else does that all over the world, we're all, even when we talk to our friends about it, we're adding to critical mass, adding to critical mass, when the sum total of this knowledge is so powerful at the collective level that anyone connected to the human mind can, the collective mind can tune to it and access that knowledge and access that inspiration and that knowingness. And this is the 100th monkey syndrome, and the collective mind is where the transformation is actually going on, and we're transferring that into the collective mind, making it available for everyone else. And I feel that's where the transformation is going to take place, and that's how what seems at times a hopeless case is not hopeless at all.
David, could you address, for those of us that have children today, and with what the coming changes, how can we make a difference with them when we're so programmed? I mean, it's so hard to know, to discipline them, to not discipline, to not squelch their creative mind. Can you speak to that a little bit on how we can make the difference with our children?
Well, my philosophy is to, we go back to the three things. Celebrate your own uniqueness, allow other people to celebrate their uniqueness, and let no one impose their will on anyone else. That's what I'd say to my children anyway. You know, you be what you is, but remember, not everyone wants to be involved with what you are and be affected by what you are. So that's the balance point. I let my children be whatever they want to be and think whatever they want to think. But I always point out that the limit to that is trying to impose it on anyone else. So if a child, for instance, is causing a lot of disturbance for other people, it's actually worth pointing out that they're actually what they want to do is actually affecting other people. Do you think that's right? But my feeling is about children, that if we can just let them be and affect their attitudes as little as possible, then they'll naturally be open human beings. I mean, you know, there's no racial prejudice in children, is there? That's something that comes later. There's no there's no prejudice in Northern Ireland between a Protestant a baby and a Catholic baby. But that's indoctrinated into them. And those two babies that are gurgling together might, 20 years later, be shooting at each other. You know, we're not born Christians or Jewish or Islamic. They ask what's conditioned into us after we're born. So the more we can let newly incarnate consciousness to express itself without indoctrination, the better. But what I feel about children today, I don't know whether you've noticed this, I've got a three-year-old back in England. When I look into his eyes, I can see the flaming universe. It's unbelievable. And what I feel is happening now is that very, very soon, before the end of this decade, the word super children is going to be a cliche. Because what I feel is that we came into incarnation at a certain vibrational level. The best we could do was the highest vibrational level available at the time we were born. And as the vibrations of the planet have increased, we've had to work removing the emotional weights to go up with it. Children now, as this vibrational state has gone on moving on, particularly since 87, harmonic convergence. I mean, basically, that's when I woke up. That energy hit me around that time, and I started to wake up before the big one hit me in 1991. The children today, increasingly, with every minute and month that passes, are able to come in on a much higher vibrational level. They can come in at the state-of-the-art level now, particularly if their parents are open also, which allows a vibrational field to be created for their incarnation, which allows them to come in at a very high level. So what I feel we're going to see, and I think we already are seeing in many children, is that their multidimensional self, their inner knowledge, their inner wisdom, and their psychic powers, all these things are actually going to manifest very, very early on in their lives compared with us. And I feel that this during this transition, some of the children are going to be telling us a few things. Children, I think, any child below five, particularly five, six, seven, eight, has come in on an increasingly high vibrational state. But that has its effects also, because one of the reasons I feel that the true potential of consciousness does not express itself before puberty is because the frustration of being within a physical form that is, through childhood, not capable of manifesting the potential of fully expanded consciousness would be so incredible that it would drive you mad. Imagine today if we were in little children's bodies now. The frustration of it, if we were in the same state of mind, the same expansion of consciousness, would drive us up the wall. I think what we call autism is some of that. And so I feel, and I've noticed it with my son, Jamie, also, I don't know whether you've found this, as this higher vibrational consciousness comes in, as the vibes of the planet go up, we're going to have to do a little bit more to help our children because they are going to be quite frustrated at being in that consciousness state while still in a child's body. And the frustration I see in my son increasingly, you know that his mind wants to do things and knows it's possible, but his body can't do it. And I think a lot of the so-called problem children are just frustrated at not being able to express their full potential that they know they can do within a body that can't at that time do it. So, and I think, you know, there's a lot to be looked at in that, because we are the front of the snowplow generations who are pushing this old world into history, and the children coming in now, maybe us if we choose to come back quick, will be the ones that will build the new world, or the start of the new world anyway, that will replace the old one. After 2012 and beyond, that's when the children the adults at that time that will do that, they're now coming in, and they're very high vibrational consciousness, I feel.
If I could share an example that relates to this particular subject, last night my middle son, who's a junior in high school, had a problem, and his older brother sat down, and the challenge was to create a symbol which would describe the yin and the yang, good and evil, that kind of thing. After they filled 2 pages of symbols, my oldest son drew a circle in front of his brother and said, "Look at the circle. It describes the whole thing based on intent and perspective." And I had wanted him to read Contact in the journals, and he sometimes did, and he came up and totally blew my mind away with that particular description. It said it all. Anyway.
Yeah, and the more we can help children not to get hooked into the conditioning and the programming, the more that purity of connection with soul is allowed to manifest itself. There's a great saying we have in England. It's probably the same here. If it's not broke, don't mend it. And I think we should just let children be with as little guidance as possible to what they should think, and just let them naturally evolve in the light of experience. Because even from that very early age, they're already creating their own reality. When I say create our own reality, the vibe we put out, in my view anyway, I mean, who the hell am I? I'm just giving my view. It's not just the imagination of ourselves we have in the moment. It's also the past life gunge that needs processing. There's a great line, death is no cure for ignorance. So what we take out of incarnation at the end of a life, we still has to be processed. It doesn't disappear. And we kind of bring that back in, and we attract things to us to process that stuff. And also there's the astrological vibes that are within our energy field, which are overwhelmingly, I feel, certainly in this period of time, designed to attract to us the experiences we need to learn, to understand, to do the job we've come to do. And so all those things are going out in the vibe we project, and it's pulling in the things we need to face. And I think children are doing that also. I remember when I was a kid, bloody funny this was, one of the things we attract to us is what we most fear. I've been going on about that. It's very important, I think, that we get out of fear and we stop attracting it. And when I was a kid, quite a small kid, I was terrified of dogs. And I lived in this council estate, as we call it, in England. The shops were over here, and between it was this green. Every time I went across the green, these flaming dogs were around me, yapping at me. My heart was going 50 to the dozen, you know. Now, my friends, in the end, it was only one bus stop ride. I used to get the bus instead of walk across this little green because I felt with the dogs chasing me. And my friends who weren't frightened of the dogs, they walked across the green completely unmolested. And I was quite small at the time. And I went to my friend's house, and he had a really docile dog called Prince. I walk in the house, the bloody thing goes loony. It actually bit a piece out of me coat in the arm here. And his mother says, oh, she said, he's never done that before. I thought, no, I know. I'm here again. And you go into poor me mode then, you know, you go, oh my God, look at this, poor me, you know, it always happens to me. Of all the people for them to do it to, it happens to be me, I don't know, I'm so unlucky. And yet what I was doing was attracting to me what I most feared. I'm not frightened of dogs anymore, but had I not, as a child, attracted that, I would still be frightened of dogs because I'd have spent the rest of my life avoiding them. And so even from an early age, we're attracting our own reality and the things we need to evolve and move on, I think, anyway.
David, don't you think it helps when we're looking at kids to see them as basically adults in little bodies?
Yeah, that's
I mean, there's no difference. In fact, if anything, they're just going to tend to pick up a lot of the stuff I've picked up that's garbage. Hmm. If I can recognize my own garbage and just let it go, then I can, instead of thinking I have to program my child.
Yeah.
With something other than the freedom to think for himself or herself.
That's exactly right. I feel anyway. If we stopped indoctrinating children, a lot of the with our own prejudices, because intergenerational passing on a prejudice is a wonderful way to set the seeds for manipulation. Because if you indoctrinate children to take on the prejudices of one side or one culture or one race, and the other race take into indoctrinate their children into the opposite, then if you want to start a war in that area of the world, it's a doddle, because you've already got the simmering intergenerational programmed resentment and prejudice that you can play off against each other. If we weren't doing that, then starting wars would be very much more difficult. I remember once I had a great example of that. I was in the old city of Jerusalem about 1993, and I went to this, you know, this temple, where Solomon's temple is supposed to be. Yeah, I love the story of Solomon's temple. And you know, once you read about it in the Bible, it was like a church hall. And yet, it's supposed to be where the Freemason people built the temple. Well, it's very difficult to be a Mason when it's built of wood, really. I know. anyway, I was there, and just down from it was a little group of Muslim children, about, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, playing soccer. And I stood there and I watched them. And they were shouting for the ball. I think everyone was called Mohammed, you know. Mohammed, pass the ball, Mohammed. And I think, crikey, how do they recognize it? But although you have been to the old city of Jerusalem, although it's quite small, it's very moving, but although it's quite small, it's still cut up into quarters. There's a Christian quarter, a Jewish quarter, an Islamic quarter, and an Armenian quarter. And they're very close to each other. And I looked at these little children playing football here, these little Arab children, and I thought already they would have a certain conditioned view of life, the universe, everything, and of Jewish people. Had they become incarnate, literally 5 minutes walk from there in the Jewish quarter or the Christian quarter, they would now, at the same age, have a very different view of life, the universe, and Jewish and Islamic people. And it's all conditioning. And if we can get off the backs of children like that, you know, if the adults didn't indoctrinate the children, all these tit-for-tat intergenerational conflicts would stop, because we'd stop perpetuating them. So that's absolutely vital, I think. And I remember having a debate at the Oxford Union once about religion, whether it was indoctrination or inspiration. And I had this interchange with the former chief rabbi of Great Britain, who just could not understand the point I was making about the difference between indoctrination and education. He felt it was right for him to persuade his children to believe what he believed, which was, well, I mean, that's how we got into this mess, you know.
I have one more question, or one more thing to bring up. You were talking about emotions and thought, and getting rid of emotional baggage. My experience, David, has been that when an emotion shows up, it's almost too late for me to do anything but to allow it to be there. And then to look at the thought process that perhaps generated it or allowed that to arise.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an interesting point. I've got this book coming out in October, I Am Me, I Am Free, which talks in about all this stuff we've been talking about today, and some more. And I've made the symbolism there between getting caught in the movie and getting out into the audience, seeing the big picture. Nothing's there for no reason, like I said earlier. Emotions are there for a reason. I mean, some of the emotions we feel are flipping blissful. You know what I mean? I've got nothing against emotion. I'd say put it in its place, however.
And it's fun to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a few people I get great emotional bliss with. But we won't go into that. But no, if you're listening, dear, it's only one. No. But it's getting out of the domination of it, and what I feel is emotion is there as part of the learning process, and it's okay to feel emotion. It's okay to get angry. One of the things you get in the New Age, to an extent, is people immediately feel guilty if they get angry. So they spend most of their life being guilty, you know, because they're always getting angry, you know. Anger is actually an emotion, and it's an experience to feel it. It's part of the evolutionary process. But what I've tended to do, there are two types of people which I think is like on the extreme. There's one that gets completely caught in the emotion, completely overwhelmed by it. There's the other, that's the majority, I feel. It was certainly me before recently. And on the other side, there's the few who have realized about emotion, and they are so emotionally detached, they don't actually feel much emotion at all. So one's being overwhelmed by it, and one's not really getting the true experience of emotion, which is a tremendous experience to understand. And then there, I think, is the balance point in the middle, which is to feel the emotion initially, and then to get out of the three-dimensional movie and look at the big picture of why that situation has happened and why you're feeling that emotion, and the fact that it's all these things I've talked about, it's not personal. So what am I meant to learn from this? So you're feeling the emotion in the moment, and you're getting the experience of what it's like and the understanding and learning from it, but then you withdraw to the big picture. So although you felt the emotion, you've processed it, it's gone, it's not another boulder on the backpack which you're carrying along with you, because you processed it in the moment you felt it. And that's what I've tried to do. And because if we're going to release emotion at the same time fill the vessel at the other end, then we're not going to move on very much. So feeling emotion's great. I mean, some guy cut me up on the way here and I felt enormous emotion, I've got to tell you.